Hello and welcome to In Focus. I'm Anthony Moreno. Our guest today is Angela Cocherga, an Emmy-winning multimedia journalist covering the borderlands for the Albuquerque Journal. Over the last couple of months, she has covered issues surrounding immigration and the recent 2018 midterm election, specifically covering the second congressional district race here in southern New Mexico. Please welcome Angela Cocherga. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony. Great to be here.
It's great to have you back in the KRWG Public Media Studios. I'd like to start things off with the recent midterm election. Now, you were covering the congressional District 2 race here in southern New Mexico with Democrat Xochitl Torres-Small and Republican Yvette Harrell. Xochitl Torres-Small pulled off an upset. Now, this was quite the race. It was a close race that was called by many media outlets in favor of Yvette Harrell, with thousands of ballots left in Doña County left to be counted. Could you kind of describe what it was like on election evening?
It was crazy. In fact, the Journal, our political analyst pollster, was one of those who called the election, and it seemed apparent based on the numbers we saw coming in, the ballots that had been counted, but what was missing is a big chunk of absentee ballots from Doña Ana County in particular. And those, there were first 4,000 that had been counted but not included, and then another 4,000 that remained to be counted. And the big issue was that the turnout was so high, especially the absentee ballots, that the staffing was not there to complete that count. So that went past the midnight and into the next day, and that night, Xochitl Torres was visibly upset when she, came out to talk. She did not concede, and wanted to see those ballots finally counted. And Yvette Harrell has not conceded, and she has requested that the ballots be impounded, which is the right of every candidate, and that her campaign take a closer look, matching both the signatures and voter registration information to the ballots. So it's, it's going through the court system, could be challenged, a recount could happen, but right now the apparent winner is Xochitl Torres, of course Yvette Harrell not conceding.
We saw in this midterm election, many people did not concede. There was recounts happening just across the country in many races.
Some political observers who know about the election system say any errors we may see looking at ballots probably are part of system-wide issues. I was there, as were other journalists, during that count of the absentee ballots, and so was the chair of the Republican Party of Doña Ana County and a state senator, a Democrat, observing everything. It was very carefully handled. It was all very transparent. So, but of course, the candidate, Yvette Harrell, has a right to ask for a closer look at the ballots. There was lots of money put into this race, and a lot of the Democratic races, the Democratic Party saw this as a place they could turn from red to blue. This is a Republican stronghold. So it was a historic race and an apparent historic victory, but of course, challenging the results is part of this whole process.
I want to move on and talk about immigration. It played such a big role across the country, as even the President of the United States was campaigning on the immigration issue using the migrant caravan that was at the time in Mexico City and moving on to recently some members of that in Tijuana. As we tape this, we have already seen the news of what has happened in the busiest border crossing in the world between Tijuana and San Diego, where there have been migrant protests on the Mexico side of the border. Migrants stormed the border, and we saw the photos of migrants being tear gassed by U.S. Border Patrol and customs officials. So seeing that issue, I mean, how do you think that's going to really affect people's understanding of this? Does this just make it more, even more partisan, do you think? Or
it's hard to see it become a more divisive issue, but clearly the images of people throwing rocks and the tear gas, it's a very volatile situation. People around the ground there say that, it was a few people, but still, it did not look good, and it affected the whole group. Some have been arrested and will be deported by Mexico. Others are rethinking, especially parents with children, whether they want to stay as part of that group. They may opt to go back, or they may decide to, you know, try and wait it out. It could take months. And what the reason this pressure cooker situation is building is because something we've seen along our stretch of border is Customs and Border Protection, CBP officers at the ports of entry. These migrants who want asylum have been told you need to go to a legal port of entry to ask for asylum. Well, they can only take so many. They say they've been overwhelmed, and since the summer have been turning away people, families. We had about 100 people camped out on one of the international bridges in El Paso where people tend to come to ask for asylum, and they were recently removed by Mexican authorities, so you've got to go to a shelter. You can't camp out. So this pressure cooker situation is building. Tijuana is the giant part of it because we've got, you know, about 4,000 people from that caravan. But people have been coming up to the border, families, for a couple years now. And this area has seen record numbers, the southern New Mexico border, and which is part of the El Paso sector, for the past 2 months, record numbers of families coming and seeking asylum, often not able to even get across the international bridge to go through the process.
I mean, we've seen in recent months people who are seeking asylum, they're basically on the bridge, sitting down, waiting for hours, possibly days, to get a chance to get in front of officials to begin the asylum process. That is something that's changed within, you know, the last 6 months, hasn't it?
Yeah, and that's because Customs and Border Protection officers have said they're not set up to handle large numbers of people, to hold people, to go through that process. So they're making people wait in Mexico. So that's become the kind of the waiting room for asylum. Others were getting frustrated or not understanding, or maybe they did understand, but coming across illegally. We had a couple large groups recently of parents with children, and they're not fleeing or sneaking in. They're turning themselves into Border Patrol and saying, we want to be part of the asylum process. Now, there's a big argument over that, is that, you know, President Trump said if you don't come through the legal ports of entry, you will not qualify. That will be challenged in court by attorneys, no doubt. And so we'll see what happens, because under the current rules, it seems apparent that people can, no matter how they get here, as long as they make it on U.S. soil. So that's to be decided. And the families, you know, having them, you know, all of this has been put in place, administration officials have said, to deter people, to tell them, don't come, we cannot accept you. And honestly, the vast majority under much stricter asylum rules will not qualify and will be deported at some point or removed. But that could take months, that could take years. So in the meantime, they wait in the U.S., often with these ankle monitors. That's the big argument. When you have a child, you cannot be locked up more than 20 days in a detention facility, because those facilities are not set up for children.
Now, one of the things that has happened in our region here in the borderland is that organizations and churches have responded to this issue, because ICE has begun to essentially drop people off and coordinate with these other organizations. I'm kind of curious, like, how has that impacted these organizations that are in churches that have, you know, traditionally helped refugees in our area?
And that's been a long-standing practice with the nonprofits, probably the best known one in our region, Annunciation House in El Paso, but working with a network of churches, including many, about 11 in Las Cruces, that are helping provide temporary shelter for migrant families, parents often with very young children. So ICE, working in conjunction with these organizations, has been saying, okay, we're going to release a certain number. Rather than just have them wander around the streets with nowhere to go, they go to these temporary shelters run by nonprofits, and then often have, they don't stay very long. They often have family that they can connect with elsewhere in the U.S., so they get a bus ticket, often provided by their family, and move on. With the ankle monitor, with the appointment to go to immigration court as their hearings, as they move through the courts and have these hearings.
One of the temporary shelters that was set up recently was, in the last 6 months, that's really gained attention from not only across the country but the world, was in Tornillo near El Paso, where there are, you know, as we're taping this, over 2,300 teenagers, mostly from Central America, at. You've been there.
I was one of the journalists who took a tour of the facility. It opened, you know, right before Father's Day, and was the site of a huge protest. People were upset about, you know, essentially children, older children, being moved into this tent city. This is a Health and Human Services facility set up for children. It's a detention facility. They cannot leave. It's unlike the shelters we were just talking about, where these are nonprofits and people move on. They are kept there. The government says for their own safety and care. The vast majority are they're termed unaccompanied minors. For a while, though, some of those unaccompanied minors were children who had been taken away from their parents during that family separation crisis. The children were moved there because they need to make room for the younger kids, the babies and toddlers, who needed somewhere to go while their parents were locked up in jail and then detention centers. So that was supposed to be temporary. And once the children who were part of the family separation were reunited, there was supposed to be some room. But, you know, the teenagers, 14, 13, 13 and above, have continued to come on their own. And it's a space issue, but there's a real question and a real concern about these are not facilities, according to child advocates, that are set up for long-term care. And temporary is now extended and could extend into a year, and the number of beds have been expanded to more than 3,000.
Now, one of the things, we just have under a minute, 30 seconds left, but I'm a little curious on your thoughts on the AP breaking the story about that the administration waived background checks for the people working at the facility at Tornillo. And so this is something that's very unusual for a situation like this. Is that not correct?
Well, the nonprofit organization that runs this facility and does like kind of crisis management, they vet their people, but you know, the government has to vet as well. And you know, anytime there's a huge ramp up trying to provide services, we saw a little bit of this in the past when also some of the background checks for Border Patrol were delayed when there was a huge hiring, a number of people hired. So it seems like sometimes that's set aside, but people argue when you're dealing with children, you cannot cut corners. And so there's a real concern about that.
Okay, Angela, I want to thank you so much for being with us on In Focus.
Thank you, Anthony.